Well, good afternoon, everyone. Everybody's teed up and ready to go. For some reason, I awoke last night thinking about this newspaper headline in the San Jose Mercury News. That's, you know, mountain monk flubs koan, spends three lifetimes as tree mushroom.
But they're only 2 years long.
Oh, really?
I mean, wasn't that how long the mushroom was?
Was it 2 years or that was three?
That's kind of what I got.
The fruiting body.
The fruiting body. Oh. Mm. The rest of it might be centuries.
Yeah. Ah, yes. Kind of busy job of recycling the forest floor to do. Today I wanted to continue with our kind of peek into the Denko Roku, and occurred to me a good place to start, and this is, see, there are how many cases in this? 53, yeah. And so how do you just spin the dial, I guess, and pick one, right? But then I got to thinking, well, you know, we've all heard the story of there have been a number of significant transmissions over the lifetime of our sect. And, of course, the Buddha to Mahakashyapa was the first one. And then down at the other end of the line, Rujing to Dogen. And while we study Dogen quite a lot and talk about Dogen quite a lot, I realized that I didn't know much about Rujing's story. The abbot of Tiantong Monastery in China. As you probably know, Dogen was born in 1200 and went to China to study with teachers there, I think when he was 27 or 28, somewhere around there, 27, I think. I think he came back to Japan when he was 30, which would have been 1230. And one of the teachers he met there, this Rujing, was the abbot of Tiantong Monastery. And again, I realized I didn't really know much about his story, you know, what was his enlightenment story, and we should probably take a look. So I wanted to focus on Rujing today and kind of just dive into it a little bit here to see what we can learn from it. It's a fairly short one, and so I thought that rather than make up my own story, I'll simply share this one with you, because there are various points along here that I think are worth stopping and studying and understanding. And the kind of the condensed version comes up front here. As you know, these are often treated as koans and as part of a koan study. And I've got the Cleary version here, so I'm sorry.
It's okay. I'll get two perspectives at once.
That's right, you will. Yes. Rujing studied with Zen master Zijian. And Zijian, I don't know, maybe I should ask Shinryu how to pronounce that. I don't really know. But anyway, Rujing's teacher asked him, how can you purify what has never been defiled? That's the koan. Okay. After more than a year, Rujing was suddenly awakened and said, I've hit upon that which is undefiled. It says Rujing gave up, this is background now, gave up doctrinal studies and went into Zen when he was 19. Okay. And actually in the Shasta Abbey version, it goes a little bit more background. Apparently he was young when his parents died. And this is what led him. Often, as you know, monasteries served as orphanages. If the parents couldn't afford to support the child or they died and there was no one to care for them, then they would often be placed into the care of the monks and the nuns. And it says, he joined the community of Zen master. Rujing gave up doctrinal studies. In other words, the first monasteries he went to were not Zen monasteries. They were into the studying of various Buddhist doctrines and sutras. He said he gave that up when he was 19, and he joined the community of Zen master Zijian and spent a year there constantly sitting in meditation. which he did more than the others. At one point, when he asked to be put in charge of cleaning the latrines, which I think they call the, what's it, the director of purification or something in that version. But he was asking to be put in charge of
head of purification.
Head of purification, yes.
In parentheses, that is latrine cleaner.
Yeah, latrine cleaner, yes, yes. Okay, good.
He volunteered for that?
Yeah. Yeah, he wanted to do that. And I thought, well, that's a job I've had several times in my life. So the master asked him, how can you clean that which has never been dirty? If you can tell me, I'll put you in charge of cleaning. Ruijing was at a loss. Even after 2 or 3 months had passed, he still didn't know what to say. Do you all know what to say? I'll have you line up for Dogsan. How's that?
Yeah.
Once the master called him to the abbot's room and asked him if he could say anything about the issue, Ruijing hesitated. Zhejiang said, how can you purify what has never been defiled? Ruijing passed another year and more without being able to answer. So I guess we have a precedent here that if we might sit for 1.5 to 2 years before we have an answer to a koan. Right? So. Another year and more passed without him being able to answer. The master asked again, but Ruijing couldn't give a reply. Then the master said, if you would get out of your old nest, and I think in that version they say get out of your rut, you would find a way. Why can't you say? After that, Ruijing was strengthened and worked on the meditation with determination. One day, Ruijing was suddenly enlightened. He went to the abbot's quarters and said, I can say it. Zhejiang said, this time say it. Ruijing said, I've hit upon that which is undefiled. Even before he finished speaking, Zhejiang hit him. Ruijing broke out in a sweat. This is another one of those great Zen stories that makes everybody want to come and study here, you know. God, I'm going to beat you with a stick. Ruijing broke out in a sweat. Then he bowed, and Zhejiang approved of him. Later at another monastery, Ruijing worked as a latrine cleaner as a way of requiting the circumstances of his enlightenment. Once, as he was passing in front of the shrine of the saints, a strange monk there said to him, cleaner of the monastery, you requite the way, you requite the teacher, you requite the community, and then disappeared. The prime minister of China heard about this and interpreted it to mean that the sages would approve of Ruijing being abbot at that monastery. Later it turned out that way. People everywhere said Ruijing's virtue was a virtue of requital, was truly quite consummate. And this connects with what you were talking about, is this sense of responsibility we feel after our years of practice, to repay that debt. And this is the same thing going on here. After he made his determination at the age of 19, Ruijing stayed in monasteries, never returning to his native place. Not only that, he didn't even talk to people from his homeland. He never visited any of the rooms of the monastery and didn't even speak to those who sat by him in the monk's hall. He just sat. He vowed that he would sit through even a seat of diamond, which is pretty hard. It says, once his flesh became ulcerated from so much sitting, but he still didn't stop. From his first inspiration through his last abbacy, there wasn't a single day or night that he didn't sit. Throughout his abbacy at several public monasteries, Ruijing's self-discipline was different from the others, in that he was committed to being the same as the monks. Although he had the patchwork robe handed down from Zen Master Daokai, therefore he didn't wear it. During his lectures and individual guidance, he just wore a black surplice and robe. I think in there they say it was a novice's robe, I think.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what the difference is, but... although he was given a purple vestment of honor and a master's title by the Emperor of China, he formally declined them. Furthermore, he kept his succession a secret, not revealing it all his life. Only at the end did he formally acknowledge the teacher from whom he had inherited the teaching. This was not only to put off worldly craving for fame, but also out of deference for the good name of Zen. Truly, his virtue was unequaled in his time. his discipline peerless in ancient or modern times. And this I find a little awkward or odd. It's almost immediately, the story does a flip-flop here. He says, he used to declare of himself, "The way of Zen founders has died out this last century or two. Thus there has not appeared a teacher like me for the last 100 or 200 years. Therefore, the abbots in all the quarters were awed by him. He never praised any of them. He used to say, since I made up my mind to go traveling at the age of 19, I found no one imbued with the way." See, it's a little odd after this, all of this humility he shows by not wearing his gifted robe, not accepting the master title, wearing novice robes, etc., etc. And then suddenly he's talking about being the best thing that came along for the last 200 years. And so no one else is even close to him. And so forth. And you know, a lot of these things, of course, are written after the fact. And my guess is that they go through a process of editing from time to time. And somebody thought, well, maybe he looks a little too humble here. Maybe we should build him up in some way. And so they edited this. I don't know. I have no way of knowing. I would say each of you should understand. Oh, I see. Yeah. He used to say, since I made up my mind to go traveling at the age of 19, I have found no one imbued with the way. Many of the monastery abbots just deal with visiting officials and pay no mind to the monk's halt. They always say, each of you should understand on your own. And so saying, they do not develop the people. Even the abbots of great monasteries now are like this. They think having nothing on the mind is the way and don't demand intensive Zen concentration in association with a teacher. Where is there any Buddhism in that? If it is as they say, why would there be old-timers persistently seeking the way? What a laugh. They haven't so much as dreamed of the way of the Zen founders. So one of the other things you see going on in these stories is the identification of or the writing out in pretty clear form what the fundamental values of Zen practice are, like this idea of giving back for what's the verb or the noun, requisition? I don't know. This idea of paying back is certainly a very clear determination. I mean, here you have a young man who's determined to accomplish the way, and he's going to, even though he's got, you know, what we call, I guess, like bed sores on his bum, he's not quitting. He's continuing to go forward. And so this kind of just rock-hard determination is another one of the values that underlies this. Okay, and there are many more that follow here. It says, among the many virtues of Rujing recorded in the diary of one of his attendants, it is said that he didn't say a word when a certain government official asked him to speak at the Yamen. Does anybody know what that is? Y-A-M-E-N? I don't have my computer here if I didn't look it up. I don't know what that is.
She has something on mind.
It's probably Chinese. Yeah. So it's a place.
Yamen,
Mun means gate.
Gate. Okay. Yeah, so would be what?
It depends on the character.
Character. The kanji. Okay. Anyway, it was a gathering of some kind, and he returned 10,000 pieces of silver that had been presented to him. When he didn't say anything, he not only did not accept the offerings of others, he did not accept fame or profit. So again, there's a very clear value statement there. Okay. So he didn't associate with rulers or politicians, and didn't even receive the greetings of traveling monks from various quarters. Rujing's virtues were truly extraordinary. It was for this reason that a certain Taoist elder and five of his followers joined Rujing's community, pledging not to return to their native place without mastering Zen. Rujing was delighted at their determination and allowed them individual guidance without requiring them to formally convert to Buddhism. In the arrangement of the assembly, he put them after the nuns. This was something quite unusual. Well, I was wondering who then followed them. Must have been the lay people. I don't know who else was left. I don't know. Convicts. There was also someone named Shanru who vowed he would stay in Rujing's community all his life and never take a single step south. There were many who likewise determined never to leave the master's assembly. Pu, the gardener, was totally illiterate and didn't begin to study Zen until he was over 60 years old. See, there's still hope for some of us. But Rujing still developed him carefully so that he finally became enlightened. Though he was a gardener, from time to time he used to utter extraordinary and marvelous sayings. Once Rujing said in a lecture that the abbots throughout the country were not equal to Gardener Pu. Later, Rujing assigned him to keep the library. Truly, in an assembly where there is the way, there are many people imbued with the way, many people with the heart of the way. And this next paragraph is, I think, a critical one. He says, Rujing always used to exhort people to just sit. He would say, burning incense, doing prostrations, reciting Buddha names, performing repentance ceremonies, and reciting the scriptures are not needed. Just sit. Guess what do we do? All of the above, you know. And, well, that's interesting. Okay. He only made them sit. He always said, the beginning of Zen study is to have the heart of the way. And what do they mean by this heart of the way? Okay, we don't get a lot of explanation here. He says, truly, even if they have some knowledge or understanding, those who lack the heart of the way cannot keep their understanding and eventually fall back into erroneous views and become wild. They are outsiders sticking to Buddhism. Therefore, good people, first of all, don't forget the heart of the way. Develop your mind fully, concentrate only on truth, and don't follow the fashions of the time. Go forward to emulate the way of time immemorial. Well, that means that we're only 1,500 years behind times. So, but what is this heart of the way? See, I interpret it as this kind of rock-hard determination that Rujing is so famous for, is to concentrate, you know, only on truth and don't follow the fashions of the time. Don't get involved in worldly kinds of things, okay, where you're entertaining ministers and rich people and go out on the stump in rich communities to develop funding for the monastery.
This translation has it.
Yeah, what do you have there?
It's a heart that aspires to the way.
Heart that aspires to the way. Good. It says, in truth, if you are this way, even if you don't attain understanding, you will be an originally undefiled person. If you are undefiled, this is being originally clean and pure. Thus, there has never been defilement. What would you purify? It says, if you can get out of your old nest, you'll find a way. The teachings devised by the enlightened ones of old did not cause people to produce fragmentary knowledge and understanding. Having them cultivate refining practice, setting their wills on the ultimate truth, they are without partiality. This is how one may at all times be free from the views of purity or defilement, and may be undefiled oneself. But so long as he still hadn't escaped the view of defilement, Rujing had an eye to mean, or an eye to use as a means of cleaning, okay, having passed more than a year without understanding. Once he got so that there was no skin to strip off, no body or mind to shed, he said that he had hit upon what had never been defiled. Yet, even so, already he had a spot on him. That is why his teacher hit him. It was a good reason for it. Even before he was finished speaking. At that point, his whole hot body broke out in a sweat. Having let go of his body, he attained power. So we know that original purity has never been subject to defilement at all. Therefore, Rujing always used to say, Zen study is the shedding of body and mind. Now tell me, what is the undefiled? The breeze of, and then Keizan Zenji, who assembled these stories, put appended a little poem at the end of each one of them. And usually he asks them, he says, you know, I've added a few words here. Would you like to hear them? And he always asked that question, would you like to hear them? And of course, then he just goes on and puts them in there. The breeze of the way blowing far is harder than a diamond. The whole earth is supported by it. So going back to the original koan, then, see, the question How can you purify what has never been defiled? Can you explain that on a logical level? Or can you express it on an intuitive level?
At mealtime we chant homage to the pure Dharmakaya Vairochana Buddha.
Okay, keep going.
That's it.
That's it?
The Vairochana Buddha is the Buddha of the pure and pure radiance. He is the pure, undefiled radiance. That's the symbol of the pure, undefiled radiance. How do you purify that? And that is, to me, the light and the transmission of the light.
Okay. How else would you express it? Good.
Shinryu Suzuki, everything is perfect. But it could stand a little improvement. You are all perfect just the way you are. You are purity. But we could still stand a little improvement.
Thank you.
It's not logical.
No, of course not. Yeah, that's going to take a whack at it.
What was the question again?
The question is, see, here is the fundamental question of the koan, is how can you purify what has never been defiled? And we know how Rujing expressed that. So the question becomes then, how do we explain this? We can try to explain it logically, which is not the point of the koan, but it's still important, I think, to try and to logically understand what's happening here. And then how would we express it experientially? Okay.
It seems like as a practice it would be, from how I see it, to continue what to observe what arises. When we sit and practice shikantaza, we're holding still and just endeavoring to observe what arises in mind and practice not doing anything with it, but all we can see is the defilement or the adding. So how can we see not adding other than to see adding? And likewise with every bit of the forms and sangha, which just takes a whole bunch of other stuff for you to look at.
Yeah. Well, it's wonderful. What is this adding? I mean, what is this defilement? You're using the word, it's an addition. Is there anything else we can call it? Where does this come from, this adding something to it?
Not separate. Mm-hmm. Dependently arisen.
You're right, you've got your finger right on it.
Who controls what arises?
Well, it's the discriminating mind, isn't it?
But who is that?
It's the discriminating mind.
Who is that?
Hmm? Yeah, who is that indeed, right?
But if we
in this case, it was Ruji. He was adding this to it. So. Very nice, thank you. Anybody else want to take a stand at it? Maybe we spoiled the pudding, I don't know.
I think she said it very well.
I think she nailed it.
You know, it's rather than an addition, it's an uncovering.
You can see it as an uncovering,
there,
something that you're uncovering.
But
still, the discriminating mind is what makes the difference between defiled and undefiled.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and this is part of our problem, isn't it? Is that we go around constantly adding stuff to the situation. Right.
We limit ourselves with our discriminating narrow viewpoint of who we are.
Sure.
And that changes from day to day, even minute by minute.
Yes.
We identify this or that view.
Yeah.
But none of those at all. Just additions.
Yeah, they're all additions. It's not, put it this way, it's something, yes, that's why I like your word addition. It's something we're adding to the situation, you see.
to me it seems like the additions, just to observe the additions is another opportunity to observe, because mm-hmm. who's doing the adding? We think that we are giving ourselves a hard time, or we shouldn't be thinking something, or we should be doing this, shouldn't be doing that. So we're always adding, and I think it's thinking we have control of the adding is the big problem.
Yeah, I'll go along with that. I think I'm in charge of my additions.
That's great. A line from Dogen comes to mind also, from the heart of Zazen. If you have immediacy without defilement, speaking of Zazen, immediacy is dropping away with no obstacles. He goes on.
Yeah. Yeah, the one thing I would want to add is that, where it says, therefore, Rujing always used to say, Zen study is the shedding of body and mind. And that's pivotal in the next chapter in Dogen, because it's when Dogen was late at night sitting in Zazen, and Rujing shouted that out, you know, drop off body and mind. And that's what, that was the trigger, okay, for him, for his own body and mind to fall away. And so that was an interesting carryover connection between the two men in the story. Good. Dr. Jacobson, would you like to add something to this?
I got a master's degree in science.
Mr. Science.
Wasn't there, I forget the guy's name, that had that clip on the radio for...
Michio Kaku?
Dr. Scholes or something like that, and he would do...
it was Dr. Science.
Dr. Science. Why is there a vacuum in space? Things like that. The becoming the master of the latrine is actually... circumstance here. I mean, we live out in the woods, and rodents are around, and they're around. And one of the residents wrote, "We found mice droppings on the shelf in the plate shelf in the kitchen." And another resident wrote back, "Yuck!" And you know, there's defilement of our plates, whereas fundamentally, it is what it is. And even the material in a latrine is purely what it is. And so it is really hard to accept it in its totality as it is, because everybody sees it as gross. And that's the discriminating mind. Mm-hmm. So what a practice to become head of the latrine crew.
Yeah.
To endeavor to kind of pass through all those discriminations and be able to deal with it as it is. And that's what we do when we appropriately deal with other things in the world, without preferences, without discriminating, then you're really in harmony, in a state of grace, in that dance with the material you're using. And it's a blast. It's fun, you know. Mm-hmm. Like for me, it's using a shovel and piercing the soil or the ground and feeling the characteristics of the soil. Wondering where it's come from and wondering where it's going to go, and know that it's still in transition. It's been in transition, and it's still in transition, and I'm in transition and helping it in transition, and yet there's no movement. Fundamentally,